two entrepreneurs think they have an answer to a future in which sea levels are rising. They're applying that answer to a rich and gaudy city that they are helping to build on the waters of the Persian Gulf. And when we say on the waters of the Persian Gulf, that's exactly what we mean. The Dutch entrepreneurs are part of the Climate Change Generation, a generation we're featuring in this final month of Climate Connections, our series with National Geographic. Here's NPR's Joe Palca.
Dubai is one of the seven United Arab Emirates, an oil-rich Gulf nation. And it's a place that seems willing to rewrite the rules. Paul Van de Kamp moved here from Holland because of a kind of anything-is-possible spirit. He points out the window of his SUV.
So that's the biggest indoor ski slope in the world, in the middle of the desert.
Van de Kamp isn't interested in skiing, but he's opened an office here in Dubai to try to sell an equally bold concept, building on water.
They say we use only 10% of our capacity for thought, and we know we use only 30% of Earth's capacity for life. Well, it's time for all that to change.
Building a house that floats, or even a village that floats, is an idea he first had in his native Holland, where land to build on is scarce and water is plentiful. The notion gained momentum when he realized that rising sea levels from climate change made new ideas crucial. But now it's an idea that's about to become a reality in Dubai.
The possibilities are truly breathtaking, but also very, very real.
Van de Kamp runs a company called Dutch Docklands that specializes in building houses, restaurants, even a prison that floats on water. Dubai has plenty of desert, but it also has miles of coastline along the Gulf. Dubai has built loads of artificial islands offshore, but they've run out of sand. Van de Kamp has provided them with a new option, floating islands. He's just gotten the green light to begin building a string of islands, each in the shape of an Arabic letter. And if you look at the islands from an airplane or an orbiting satellite, they'll spell out something written by Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, the Prime Minister of Dubai.
He writes a lot of poems, and he has written a proverb. One of the sentences, not everyone who rides a horse is a jockey.
You won't be surprised to learn that the Sheikh is very interested in horse racing.
The first word, this is the word jockey. It consists of five islands.
The floating islands will have hotels, restaurants.
With a helipad, with a marina.
So who's going to live here?
A lot of people.
This project may sound like the intersection of a wild imagination with an excess of money, but Van de Kamp and his partner Koen Aldhuis hope it's something more. They want it to catalyze a change in people's expectations about where it's possible to live. And since global warming will bring a rise in sea level, they say a change in thinking is essential. The roots of this change start in Holland, where Aldhuis got his degree in architecture. He says even though Holland borders on the North Sea and is awash in canals, rivers, and lakes, everything they taught in architecture school was about designs for dry land.
And we could do some beautiful facades, and we could do some small adjustments to normal concepts, but we're not allowed to come up with new concepts. We had all these ideas in our head, and this water was so open, and there was not a single concept more than a houseboat.
So in partnership with Van de Kamp and with potentially interested clients in Dubai, Aldhuis unshackled his mind from convention. Anything you can build on land, you can build in the water. He's designed floating cruise ship terminals, floating hotels, a floating mosque, even a floating beach. Yes, a floating beach.
And by developing a floating beach, really, really wide beaches with palm trees on top of it, made of foam and concrete, layers of white sand on top of it, and then you walk into the water and it feels exactly like a normal beach, but this whole island will go up and down with the fluctuation of the water.
And that ability to rise up and down with the water makes floating architecture a potential solution to sea level rise that will come with climate change. The floating beach design is essentially the same as the floating islands Dutch Docklands is building for the Sheikh in Dubai. These are foam and concrete platforms that you can build on top of.
Each island is also stable. You have some damping and mooring systems underneath it. So if you're living on such an island, it feels exactly the same as a normal house. Only 1 or 2 days a year when there's a big storm. It can happen that you feel a little bit of shaking, but 97% of the time it's absolutely the same stability as a normal house.
But no basements, of course. Flexible pipes bring in water and electricity and carry away waste. Aldhuis sees Dubai as a testbed. One day, he hopes cities will turn to floating architecture as a way to survive the kind of world that climate change is bringing.
New York, Tokyo, Singapore, Hong Kong, all places in which it's very hard to get a piece of land to build, and you have this opportunity built on the water. So if you can buy or rent water and build a floating house or floating development on top of it, that's the possibility to make expansion to your city.
Althaus says the strict border between land and water will dissolve in the coming years. That's his vision anyway. Dubai is a long way from New York and Tokyo, so why are Althaus and Paul Van de Kamp starting here? As we eat lunch next to the pool at a hotel near his house, Van de Kamp tells me he wanted to build on the water in Holland, but he got frustrated.
It takes you at least 8 years, and there are always coming problems and problems and problems, and they're all you get communities who say we don't want it here, we doesn't want it. So to obtain a license in the Netherlands, it's almost impossible.
But here, in the land of indoor ski slopes,
here it's different. They like it, and they can, for instance, say, start tomorrow. Because if the Sheikh gives you a license, that's a license.
Van de Kamp says he's got several projects he's hoping to build here, including those floating hotels Althaus dreamed up. If these deals go through, he'll make a boatload of money, and that will be nice, of course. But he says he and Althaus are committed to building floating architecture for a much grander purpose, solving global problems. They hope to use the money they make here to undertake projects of a more humanitarian nature. They've already designed a floating platform that people in Bangladesh could use to save livestock when floodwaters rise. But for the moment, they're tied to Dubai, with its wealth and its ambitions. Van de Kamp says maybe that's not such a bad thing.
I think the States, we always say it, like the we call it then the American Dream, and then we said to each other, I mean, you mustn't call it the American Dream anymore. You must call it the Middle Eastern or the Dubai Dream, because really, it really happens here.
So just think of all that idle water in your community and start putting it to work. Because where there is nothing, anything is possible.
It's called dreaming big. But that's what innovators tend to do. Joe Palca, NPR News.
You can see the floating buildings, even a prison designed by Paul Van de Kamp's company, in a video report at npr.org/climateconnections. The latest global warming stories from National Geographic magazine are right there, too.
Michigan has the country's highest unemployment rate and had lost more than 74,000 jobs in the last year. But here is one area where the state is succeeding: school robotics competitions. At a national championship in Atlanta this week, teams from Michigan high schools and middle schools are dominating. Susanna Capelluto of Georgia Public Broadcasting went to the competition to find out why.
Being a nerd is cool at Zeeland West High School in Michigan, just ask senior Stuart Elzinger. He drives the school's robot.
We're pretty successful, so a lot of people think it's cool. It's not like being on the football team, because our football team's won one game in the last 3 years. We've brought more trophies back to the school than any athletic team at our school.
Elzinger's team is called BOB, short for Build on Brains. It's one of 46 robotics teams from Michigan at this week's first competition. The state has the largest representation, fielding 1/8 of all U.S. teams.
He's ready. 3, 2, 1, go.
Robots here at the Georgia Dome look like 5-foot-tall praying mantises on wheels. They race around a track in bumper car fashion. For 2 minutes, they pick up and push around 40-inch balls, all by remote control. There's a lot of mechanics involved, and it's no surprise Michigan dominates.
It's the auto industry investing for the future, is what it is.
Scott Marlin is a technical training manager at Chrysler. He mentors the Juggernauts, a team from Pontiac. The big three Detroit automakers all sponsor teams at this competition, and so do their suppliers. Marlin says the industry invests in the students even in bad economic times because there aren't enough U.S.-born engineers.
One solution to that problem has been the importation, bringing in foreign nationals to be our engineers, and we want more and more local homegrown people. And this is one way to get people excited about coming into the engineering field.
These high school teams have cult followings in Michigan, with fans showing up at competitions in painted faces. The excitement pleases Kevin Gay, who works for General Motors and mentors a team from Romulus, Michigan. He hopes these students will stay in the state once they graduate.
Yeah, you need to have the kids, the smart people in your area, so companies come to your area, so then you get your economy back.
Stuart Elzinger's hometown of Zeeland has already been hit. Some supply companies have closed, and he realizes that what he's learning now could save his community later.
Everybody knows that they're going to need us to come in and innovate more and come up with new ideas, because the world's changing and this is what's going to drive the world.
But for now, Elzinger has to drive his robot through the competition. And just being from Michigan raises his statistical odds. Teams from his state have won the national competition 5 of the last 6 years. For NPR News, I'm Susanna Capoluto in Atlanta.
Google has blown away critics who said the sagging economy would hit the company's profits, but the internet search and advertising behemoth has reported a rise in quarterly earnings, partly due to overseas web surfers and also because of a new online ad formula. NPR's Laura Seidel has more.
Analysts had lowered expectations because recently they noticed fewer people were clicking Google's online ads. Steve Weinstein of Pacific Crest Securities says when Google released its earnings, there was a collective sense of surprise. In the first quarter, the company's earnings were up 30%, or about $300 million, in the midst of a slow economy.
You know, people, I think, just kind of tended to overshoot on the low end, and now we're kind of readjusting and recalibrating.
Google says analysts misunderstood why there were fewer people clicking on their ads this quarter. Improvements in the company's ad formula meant that those who did click were more likely to actually buy something. Their carefully targeted ads give them an edge in a slow economy, says Alan Weiner, an analyst at Gartner.
In an uncertain climate, people who are looking for efficiency in their online dollars are probably turning to online advertising because they get the best bang for their buck.
Weiner says Google also got a boost from its growing overseas operations. He says that's likely to make rivals Yahoo and Microsoft a little worried, because it might cut into an overseas market where both have done better than in the U.S. against the fast-growing Silicon Valley behemoth. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.